I still got plans that I never spoke. A lot of rhymes that I never wrote. A lot of dreams that I never lived.
But if I think about it, then I mean I really did.
Just not yet.
I used to wish that I was here now.
Smooth selling on my own boat. About to jump up on another plane. Right before I take another vote.
It's all love.
If you hear you done been through it.
It's your business
if you went to it. If it ain't mine, I ain't into it. So I don't care what you
meddling. You can say what you peddling. Cause they can easily influence. I'm about to take another long drive. Cause it helped me get a clear mind. So while you staring at your watch, I'll be looking at the sun. Yeah, I'm moving on real time.
I used to wish that I was here now. Smooth sailing on my own boat. About to jump up on another plane. Right before I take another tow.
I used to wish that I was here now.
Smooth sailing on my own boat. About to jump up on another plane. Right before I take another tow.
I used to wish that I was here now.
Smooth sailing on my own boat. About to jump up on another plane. Right before I take another tow.
I used to wish that I was here now.
Smooth sailing on my own boat. About to jump up on another plane. Right before I take another tow.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. You're listening to Cannabis Corner on WNHHLP 103.5 FM, broadcasting live from downtown New Haven. We're streaming live on TuneIn Radio and NewHavenIndependent.org. We're also streaming live video on Facebook Live. Just go to Facebook.com/NewHavenIndependent or go to your Facebook page and look us up. I can't hear myself here, so I need to turn up my headset.
Good morning, Joe.
There we go.
How are you doing this morning, Joe?
Now I can hear myself. All right. Scary thing when you can't hear yourself. Think you're going deaf. Anyway, how's everybody doing this week?
Oh, I'm doing good.
Good, 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 good.
Sorry, so, I missed last week.
That's all good. We all have things happen. I held down the fort. It was an interesting show.
Joe held it down kind completely. Of fun.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, it was good to have guests. They carry the show. Okay. I just ask questions, they answer. So I just wanted to mention a couple things this week that went on. The Democrats had their convention this weekend.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very interesting. You know, a lot of people, well, how does this relate to cannabis? It does relate to cannabis because depending on who they do, you know, they support as their candidate, if they support cannabis or not. So the Democrats picked Ned Lamont. We're all thrilled.
Yeah.
And Susan Bicewicz as their lieutenant governor. Now, Ned Lamont got overwhelming support from the Democrats. Joe Ganim didn't even get the 15%, unfortunately.
He ended up with 13.
Right? 13. And he does say he's still going to run for a primary with the signatures. Mm-hmm. And then, but the big story coming out of this was Eva.
Oh, yeah.
Eva, to
she
me,
made noise.
Could save the Democratic Party right now. Because I got to tell you.
And we're talking about Eva Bermudez Zimmerman,
right. Eva Bermudez Zimmerman. Kind of came up a little bit late. I really think had she had a little more time and campaigned a little longer, she might have actually given Bicewicz a run for her money.
You know who manages her, right?
Who?
Jason Ortiz.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. I knew he was supporting her. I didn't know he managed her. Well, that's great. We'll get to Jason Ortiz. He's going to be speaking at one of our events this month, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Women Grow on June 7th. Mark that date. We'll get that out of the way early. Women Grow, June 7th. Jason Ortiz, who manages Eva Bermudez Zimmerman, and he'll have a lot to say about that.
And he's the vice president of Minority Cannabis Business Association. So
right.
He's pretty connected in Hartford, and so he's going to kind of help bring us up to speed with what all happened this year and
what we're going to do.
Up in the legislature and what we're going to do for next year.
Right.
So just kind of getting prepped and ready because we got to kill it this year.
Well, here's the thing. I think if Eva makes it onto the ticket, and truthfully, I do believe that she will win a primary because I think people need to realize Connecticut is a lot more diverse than they think.
Oh, yeah.
And I do believe that the diverse voices are now starting to speak up a little more and be heard in this state. And and it's nice to see a ticket with some diversity in it because we're tired of looking at the same color faces all the time running this state. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And I think Keeper and I talked about that early on in the campaign. When are we going to get a person of color in on these races? And it looks like we finally have a chance to do that. And I think that for the Connecticut and for the Democrats would be the best thing that could happen. Because let's face it, as far as supporting cannabis legalization, our best chance is with the Democrats. As much as, you know, we have our own opinions about Ned Lamont, I think Eva might balance out that ticket a little bit. You know, Ganiman and Eva would be a great ticket as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
But the problem with Ganim, I think, is he may have the support of the people, but you can tell by the vote that he really doesn't have the support of the party, which is unfortunate. You know, and you need kind of both. You need the support of your own party.
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate because, you know, I know we all kind of know Joe Ganim. We kind of like him. You know, he's come right out and said, I'll legalize that weed right away.
I mean, he has a lot of personality, and he does have like this comeback kid kind of story, which is relative to a lot of people here in the state, and specifically people from the Bridgeport area, people of color. But I think where he kind of maybe sort of went wrong is riding that a little too much.
Yeah.
Because his opportunities to come back are much different than the average person.
Right.
So although, yes, he definitely has a comeback story, triumph, you know.
Yeah, over adversity, the whole deal.
Yeah, but it's just a different kind of
situation. Personally, I think his policies probably would be better off from the state, for the state, than the policies of, say, Lamont, because he's not as far left.
Right, and I really feel like Ganim kind of is in touch with the people, you know, and he knows, he knows the pulse of.
I mean, where's Ned Lamont been the last four?
I didn't even know.
Counting his money
around
in Greenwich, right?
Yeah, ultimately.
I mean,
what
I don't know what
he's been doing.
I don't know. I mean, I would think you'd want somebody who's been involved in politics for the last few years.
Yeah, and I really don't think we need to have like this rich governor who just is used to money.
Didn't we
flowing.
Just have that?
Yeah, we just had that.
Yeah, you know, Greenwich and Stanford aren't that far apart.
No,
I mean, really. I mean, how long are we going to let that end of the state run the whole state, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, I guess if Lamont goes forward and we have him, then we just really need to make sure that he's speaking our language and is in line with our agenda.
And I think
we say it all the time, if 71% of Connecticut residents feel like cannabis should be legalized, then whomever we have in office should represent that.
Well, they've already come out as a pro-cannabis.
Yes.
I mean, that's part of their platform
this
year. They're running on it. You know,
but I mean, even just not just, all right, yeah, we legalize, but how are we
legalizing?
We're going
to legalize it, yeah.
You know, I would wonder, and I think it would be a good conversation for us to have with potential Governor Lamont, if that is the case, about how he feels about, you know, equity
and
inclusion and home grow and things that are all really important.
That would be a great conversation.
Yeah, because it's one thing to legalize, but if you're rich and you just want to help other rich people get rich, and that's the way this cannabis is set up in Connecticut right now,
we don't want it anymore. Yeah we're tired of that.
We've seen that firsthand.
Yeah, and we know the Republicans are against it. At least Mark Boughton is the candidate. Although he probably, if they change their stance, it might make the race a little more interesting. But I think as long as they're against it, so.
And then really, like, why are they against it? Like, what are they against? And I really think it's to continue the monopoly
until they figure
keep
out
certain people
I would
out
agree
of
100%.
Making out
I agree.
Of the industry.
I agree.
Like, I really think that they've figured out a way to whitewash the industry by calling it this super medical pharmaceutical.
Right.
Because it takes it out of the common folk hand, in all honesty. Because if it's a quote unquote pharmaceutical, that means that it's big pharma behind it. So only the companies that are willing to dish out X amount are going to be considered. So are you of that quote unquote pharmaceutical level? It's the same thing with opening the medical dispensaries or calling them specialty member only pharmacies.
Yeah,
you
come
know,
on.
You know, you're taking a piece of parcel of land, buying it for dirt cheap, and you're going to pump a ton of money in it.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of investment that you're looking to put in, it's takes the common folk out of it. It takes people that need the social equities, the reinvestment to the communities. You know, here in New Haven, the Amnesty, what are they going to do to actually, if the gentleman puts the dispensary there across from the Stop and Shop and right by the entrance to the highway, what is he going to do to improve that community?
And see, and this is why it's also important, you know, like that particular, so I believe that the people who applied for that establishment also own the Owl Shop downtown.
Yep. Oh.
And for probably this past entire year, every time I went to the Owl Shop, I talked about cannabis and brought it, and they did not even bother to call and circle around. So my feeling is, because, you know, I've noticing that with the dispensaries, with the grow facilities, it's like they don't really even want to, or they don't see the importance of collaborations
with the cannabis community at large. Yeah, I agree.
They didn't even come to the leadership summit.
Exactly.
No, only one dispensary out of all of them.
Mm-hmm. So to say you want to open up a brand new members only pharmacy here in New Haven and not even to support the community that's going to be your patients, because we are pushing for adult use. We are pushing for the medical market. We want everybody to kind of have their place as long as they're giving back a free share, you know what I mean? Yeah. And allow open access across the board. If you're coming in at a tier three license at $10 million and they're still a tier one, then that's great for you. Why not support the business? Because there has to be some type of small ancillary services.
Yeah.
Had they come out, they might have met somebody that could do their packaging. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Who knows?
Or help them with, you know, their... potentially, hopefully, we will have require a diversity plan or things like that, you know.
There was a lot they could have learned.
Yeah, it's just, so I really hope that the city of New Haven and other cities that have really diverse populations, other cities who, you know, I sound like a broken record, but other cities who've been affected by the war on drugs, like they really make sure that as these businesses are coming, that they are involved with the community, that there is a... community reinvestment, and that there is some sort of, you know, responsibility put upon these businesses to behave in a manner that is inclusive as well.
100%. And with that, you know, this is here in New Haven alone. Here is your opportunity. Here's a little free information. The gentlemen and women that are coming up and having this at your city council, and they're saying, we want to have a specialty pharmacy. Your first question is, what are you going to do for the local area to put back into your community? You know, we know that downtown, that, I mean,
that should almost be a requirement. You know what I mean?
The Amity area there is a little dirty at times, you know, it happens, you know, a little bit of, you know, but I know the city's working on taking care of it, but to have a private business come in and put some money in and put, you know, reinvest into the community that they're looking to take part in, you know?
And that's my problem, I think, overall with the fact that we're not even having these conversations here in Connecticut.
I know.
You know, it's like, how, okay, are you not paying attention to what other cities and towns are doing?
Well, it sounds like we got a phone call already.
Ooh.
Ah, so who do I have on the line here?
Marvin Washington.
Marvin Washington, how are you? It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, thanks. I thought I was interrupting or something, and I didn't know what I was actually calling into the show. You guys were on live, but it's all good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. We're doing great, Marvin.
Yeah, usually, you know, there's some sort of transition. Sorry about that.
No, we just go straight
just
into it.
Line.
You're just on the line.
That's fine.
So welcome, and thank you for calling in today. We really appreciate you coming on. And usually when it's someone I've invited, I like tell a story of some sort. So I met you for the first time at the CWCBE in New York. And you were just like this tall. Oh, no, actually, was that the first time I met you?
Yeah, I think that was the first time.
Because you weren't at the Viridian Financial.
I didn't meet you. I met you then.
Okay, I saw you, but I don't think we actually met. But yes, at the CWCBE is where we first met. And, you know, he's big, tall, football player.
I remember seeing him there.
Force. And, you know, when he speaks, everyone listens. He's really respected and really has a voice for former and current players in the NFL. And I'm sure that extends to other sports leagues. And let's see what Google or Wikipedia says about you. You're an October baby like me, a former football defensive end who played 7 seasons in the National Football League, selected 6th round of the 1989 NFL draft, played 8 seasons for the New York Jets.
Yeah.
And additionally played for the Denver Broncos, because you're born and raised in Denver, Colorado, right?
Yeah, I was in Denver until my dad's job transferred, and we moved at age 12 and moved to Dallas.
Okay, very nice. So tell us a little about yourself outside of what Wikipedia says. And
yeah, how'd you get involved in the cannabis industry?
I played a total of 11 years. They're factual on that. And I played with Denver and picked up a Super Bowl ring.
Nice.
Outside of that, you know, I retired in 2000. Then I went into the financial industry. Mm-hmm. For about 12 or 13 years, I was with a couple of big houses, and then I went out on my own and did the boutique firms. And I was introduced to this cannabis space about 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, because I didn't know anything about it, and particularly the medicinal benefits, like most people. Mm-hmm. And I started the path to with that patent that the NIH and the government hold, 6630507, mm-hmm. that says CBD cannabinol is a antioxidant and neuroprotectant for the brain, mm-hmm. In relationship to concussions.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that was, you know, I know a helmet cannot stop a concussion, and that's a big thing in NFL, concussions and CTE. And so I pursued that route, and I'm still pursuing that route. But, you know, this is such a wonderful space to be in. Since then, I've branched out to be an advocate for not only the whole cannabis plant as an alternative to the opiates and pharmaceuticals that they're taking in any contact sport, hockey, football, wrestling, what have you, but also making sure as an African American man that this space that's being developed, this industry that's been being developed. That we can do a better business, not business as usual, mm-hmm. and make a level playing field for the communities that have been punished and hurt the most by a prohibition of cannabis. So I do diversity panels. I go to D.C. And lobby on behalf of cannabis and hemp. And also, you know, I'm a businessman. I came out that background. I'm also, you know, an insider or partner or investor in 5 different companies. Mm-hmm. I sit on 2 boards, and I can't tell you guys this news, but in a few weeks, there's a pretty big company that I'm going to get on the board, and I think I can, you know, really help the disenfranchised communities. With the platform that they're going to give me. Very so that's me in a nutshell. Oh,
thank you.
Cool.
That's great.
Oh, yeah. I'm suing Jeff's, the DOJ, too.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's important.
So can you talk a little bit about that case and, like, where you are with things now? I know.
Of course. The case was filed in district court in the Southern District up here in Brooklyn. No, in Lower Manhattan. Last summer, we had an initial hearing where the judge gave us an expedited trial date. We had discovery. And then we had our hearing in February. And my thing was, you know, we got in, the judge was like, you know, on the government by saying, how can you say this doesn't have the medicinal benefits? How can you say this is highly addictive or whatever? He made some acknowledgments that I believe was only the second time or a third time that's ever came out of a federal court. Mm-hmm. But he sided with the government as far as going with the agency review deal, because he said, even if I side with you guys, you're going to end up in the appellate court anyway. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be overturned. So basically what he did was sent us to appellate court, which is whether we won or lost that day, we'll end up in appellate court. So we've refiled. We're in appellate court, and our next hearing, we'll get a court date. We'll probably be sometime late summer, early fall to keep pushing this. But we're going to see this all the way through, because real quickly, the reason why we can't go through an agency review is the average agency review is anywhere from 9 to 19 years.
Right.
Wow.
And we have patients in our lawsuit, like Alexis Bortel, who, mm-hmm. who need help now. Mm-hmm. Who cannot travel because a third of the land in America is federal land. She can't fly. Mm-hmm. She's a refugee from her own state of Texas. Mm-hmm. and she needs the medicine now, so we can't go through the agency review, not when you have a guy that's ahead of that agency that has been a known, has known animosity against cannabis plant.
Right.
So we're hoping that we go all, we take this all the way to the big court and get a full argument and then let them decide, which I've said, like, you know, the ACA came out of that conservative court, and also the Equality and Marriage Act came out of the Supreme Court. So if we get before the Supreme Court, you know, I think we have a 50-50 chance to end this 80-something year propaganda lie and prohibition that has been put upon the American people.
Marvin, I wanted to ask you a little bit. This recent ruling about the online sports betting, which really referred back to the 10th Amendment, can that be used in the same way for cannabis legalization? Because from my understanding, the 1937 Marijuana Tax Act was already declared unconstitutional. And the act we're running on now is the Controlled Substances Act of 1970.
Enacted by Richard Nixon, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, then your so is to get that declared unconstitutional, am I correct? Part of your lawsuit is?
Of course, because of the way, the reason why it was written, and the reason why I joined it, because if you look at the etymology of why Richard Nixon wanted to do that, he wanted to go after two groups.
Right.
He wanted to go after the counterculture hippies of the late 60s, early 70s, who were protesting the Vietnam War. And he was definitely, I wouldn't say prejudiced, but he wanted to go after African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
So that's why he didn't listen to the Schaefer Committee or anything like that. He convened this commission to study cannabis, and it came back with saying everything that we're saying today about the plant. And he ignored all that, put it on schedule war, and started in earnest the war on drugs. And the next year, there were like 33,000 black males that were arrested, and we're still getting arrested.
Oh yeah.
But going back to the 10th Amendment, it definitely has it, because here's the thing. I was with Dana Robacher a couple weeks ago. And he's going to come out with a bill, a marijuana states rights bill. If we do that, I feel satisfied with it, because every time this has been put before the people, they've passed it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we as a society have decided that alcohol is okay, mm-hmm. that tobacco is okay, now we've decided that legalized gambling is okay, mm-hmm. Sports gambling is okay. Well, then leave it before the people and let the states decide.
That's right.
What, you know, I would be satisfied with that.
Mm-hmm.
So would I.
There could be no federal interference. Mm-hmm. We can get taxation. We got to get this this 289 deal right, because we're getting overtaxed.
Mm-hmm.
And these states can start getting revenue from this plant. And the other thing is that it will heal your community, because whenever cannabis is introduced into a community,
mm-hmm.
opiate addiction goes down anywhere from 15% to 25%.
Yes.
Right.
And we can't keep going down this opiate path that we're on. We're going to lose mm-hmm. a generation.
Yeah.
But we need to get back to phyto-based Very medicine, true. Which is plant-based medicine. And I believe that cannabis can lead that way in the 21st century.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. We all agree with you there.
Yeah.
And we really appreciate the work you're doing, because I think that this work on the federal level is really the most important stuff. The stuff you just talked about is how laws get changed. I mean, this is how, you know, actually alcohol prohibition, you know, became about becoming, you know, repealed. So, I mean, we're following the same path, and it has to happen, I think, on the federal level before a lot of these states are going to loosen up and start legalizing on the state level.
You know, it's going to happen, man. When I got into this space, you know, it was a matter of if I feel pretty confident with the momentum that we're having that's going by state, just like even when prohibition ended, it wasn't until 1953 that all states, you know, adopted, you know, and you could drink in all states. So it's going to take a while, but I think this is going to happen faster than anybody expected. I said, you know, this thing is going to happen. And I said this a few years ago. I said this thing is going to happen gradually and all at once.
Mm-hmm.
So you better start positioning yourself, you know, to be able to, when the tide comes in, your boat rises too, because there's going to be some changes ahead. And I don't know if people in this space are really prepared for them when,
right.
if it does go decriminalize or deschedule on the federal level, then you're going to have, it's going to change the game.
Oh, yeah.
Then you know, it has to get, you're going to have banking and you're going to have accounting and then you're going to have big form and big tobacco and big alcohol. They're going to get in here.
Yeah.
You know, and I know a lot of people are saying, no, they, you know, we don't want them in here, but I kind of do because I want their billions of dollars in R&D that they can put behind this plant.
Yeah,
that's right. And I don't believe they can chemically alter this plant like they've done with, you know, nicotine, and it becomes a scourge in the community.
Right.
I believe that cannabis, it's either states' rights or it's medicinal, mm-hmm. or it's medicinal, or it can help heal your community, and also it can help your community out economically.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things about the black and brown community that we're wrestling with all over the country is regentrification of the neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I tell my people all the time, if we get cannabis in our community, we can regentrify our own communities.
Mm-hmm. Yep, right.
You know?
Right.
But there's a lot of trepidation in the black and brown community, as there should be, because we view the industry of the, you know, the prison industrial and mm-hmm. incarceration and arrest and whatever, and we're still doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some trepidation there, but I don't want everybody else to go to the bank and we keep still right. going to the jail
right.
or we get locked out of right. the industry. Right.
And that was going to be my next question, and I know we're almost out of time, but, you know, how are you encouraging people of color to position themselves? Because, like, in a state like Connecticut, it's not even a conversation about equity until we bring it up. I bring it up.
We got to do it by town by town, by because this is the way this thing is going,
mm-hmm.
municipality by county, by state. And so I'm trying to have more centric things in the community for cannabis and show our community that you don't have to grow it, sell it, or smoke it to be in this industry
right.
And make money and what it can do for you medicinally and what it can do for you economically.
Right.
And also going to the churches
mm-hmm.
and telling them, because the biggest influence in our communities has been is either Catholic Church or the Baptist Church for,
right.
you know, for whatever it is. But it's the church,
well,
you know,
and
it's been that
church.
Way. And so we're trying to gear up in Jersey and Texas and in New York and California to go to the churches and tell people just about the medicinal benefits
mm-hmm.
and the economic benefits and just to hit them with the facts.
Mm-hmm.
Because people have been lied to. The head of the New Jersey Black Caucus says, you know, you can overdose on cannabis, you know, off of one hit and whatever. That shows you how misinformed people are.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's still that reefer madness. We got to get out there and educate the public.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about education. Crazy. That's what it's really about.
Right.
And it's great to have a voice like yours, you know, representing the cannabis community and really fighting out there, not only for that, but for the rights of athletes and people who have been injured,
mm-hmm.
You know, and the CTE and the concussion stuff. That's great work. Mm-hmm. How do people get in touch with you? How can they find you and, you know, get involved?
I'm pretty easy to find. I think everybody in this industry has my card, but if not, you know, I'm on social media, the three platforms. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and IG. I don't do Snapchat or anything like that. Yeah. I can't figure that out.
I'm too much.
You can find me just Marvin Washington on all three of those, and people reach out to me all the time, and I respond because people need education, because only 10% of this country know anything past THC and CBD.
Right.
That's right, and there's so much more.
Only 10%, you know, so we got to go out and educate and be responsible in our use,
mm-hmm.
you know, and saying that we want to change the negative stereotypes and connotations that is associated with the plant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, you use smoke and whatever, but just be responsible because mm-hmm. people are looking.
Yes, right. They are.
Absolutely. Well, Marvin, thank you very much. We'd love to have you on again and, you know, talk a little bit more in depth. But you can find Marvin on social media. Marvin Washington, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks,
hey,
Marvin.
Thanks, Marvin. Thanks, have a great one.
Thank you so much.
All right. So Josh called in while we were talking, but this was, you know, I really enjoyed that conversation, and I hope we were able to text him and let him know to call now. But anyway, it's 1:30, so...
Oh. Yeah, Andrew, thanks.
You are listening to Cannabis Corner on WNHHLP 103.5 FM, broadcasting live from downtown New Haven. We are streaming live on TuneIn Radio and NewHavenIndependent.org. We're also streaming live video on Facebook Live. Just go to Facebook.com, New Haven Independent, or go to your Facebook page and look us up. Harry, were we able to get a hold of Josh to call back? Okay, he's going to call right back. So that was a great conversation, Martin.
That was
had.
Awesome.
You know, and I really believe that what they're doing with that lawsuit could lead to that law being declared unconstitutional. And once that happens, they pretty much have to go with that 10th Amendment thing.
Yeah.
You know, the whole reason they made that law was because the original law from 1937 was declared unconstitutional. Right. And Richard Nixon, oh, no, no, we got to have a law in there. We got to have a drug law in there. So he created this one, which was worse. You know, and he created the whole schedule 1, 2, 3, and 4 and all that kind of thing in 1970. And we come to find out now that it was targeted towards, you know, the hippies and the blacks, the civil rights protesters. And we got Josh coming in, and we're going to talk a little bit about it. I wonder if he was at the convention. Josh?
Yes.
How are you, Josh?
How's it going?
Hello, good. Josh.
Hello, hello, Josh.
How you doing?
State Representative Josh Elliott on the phone.
I know, we're just like, Josh, Josh, we should, you know, treat the man with the respect he deserves.
Yes, 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 you do.
Representative Elliott, how yes. are you this afternoon?
I'm doing quite well. It's a nice sunny day, but not too hot, so it's a good little balance.
Well, yes, good. I hope you're chatting with us outside on your patio.
Nah, I'm inside the office, obviously.
Okay. So, were you at the convention this weekend?
I sure was.
Oh, how was it?
It was long. It was so. It was the first one that I've been to. So a lot of these last couple of years have been a pretty quick learning experience for me. And I just am getting a chance to learn the process from the inside out. And it's pretty cool. You know, there's a lot of things that I wish would be different, but there's a lot of things that make me feel like, all right, we got an okay system in place, too. So, you know, there's always changes that we could make.
Well, that's it. That's why you're in office, right? To make changes.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. So so the big story coming out was, I mean, obviously Ned Lamont, and I think that was pretty much expected. He was going to win the nomination.
Yeah.
But the big story coming out was Eva.
That's
and,
right.
And you know, I think that she's really created a lot of buzz within the, you know, the Democratic Party, but not only the Democratic Party, but within the, you know, the citizens of Connecticut.
And I think we should say her whole name too,
yes,
so people could get more familiar with who she
agreed.
Is.
Agreed. Ava Bermuda Zimmerman.
Ava, yes. Right. So, and she made a big splash, and tell us a little bit about that and how she came up so quickly.
Sure. So, Ava's my friend. We were sitting about 6 months ago, and she was thinking, and we were talking about what it would look like, you know, if all the cities came together and had their slate. But then if we had a progressive slate that was just completely different and give people an option about the direction that we want the party to go. And at that time, it was sort of unclear about what that would look like. And then a couple months went by, and she announced for Secretary of State. And, you know, I thought Denise had done a pretty good job. So I wasn't on board Team Ava at that point, because my feeling is, if you're going to be putting all that time and effort in, you want to put it in against somebody who's, like, pretty bad.
Right.
It's a lot of work to be going after somebody who you think is just okay. And I thought Denise was better than just okay. Mm-hmm. And Matt Lesser, another representative, actually had thought about going after Secretary of State as well, but he had made it known that he was going to drop out if Denise was going to come back in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I sort of disappointed them by not backing Ava for that race. And I was also really trying to be on board with Team Beiswitz for LG, because I thought that she would be a pretty good, sorry, not LG, but governor at this point, because I thought that she would be a pretty good competitor for the general.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of checked out for a little bit, wasn't making any endorsements or anything, and a lot of stuff happened really quickly in a really short period of time. You know, Harris dropped out, and it just really became between Beiswitz and Lamont and Ganim. And we know that Lamont is not going after CEP funding, the public election funding. We know that Ganim is barred from doing so. So only Susan was doing so. And apparently it just became really, really hard for her to raise that money. So she cut a deal with Ned. And my hope was to be a closer part of that campaign, which never actually materialized.
Mm-hmm.
Because my feeling is that I can do a good job of pushing candidates to the left and making sure that we're, you know, getting some of these issues like legalization out there in the forefront as not just a stepping stool to get elected, but really also as a way to convince people and push people so that the legislature as a whole feels more comfortable with making some of these big changes and not thinking that they're going to lose their seats as a result, which is really what organizers and activists need to be doing is clearing the way so that representatives who really just want to be there just to be there, which is a good number of people, to let them feel more comfortable going after some of these more difficult pieces of legislation. So it became clear that, you know, Biswith hadn't reached out to really almost anybody, and because they weren't able to raise the money, just made that decision to drop down to LG. And then the race became completely different for me, where Ava had really announced for LG just a couple weeks prior, and because she's my friend, the night before, Representative Soto, who's out of New London, who's also a phenomenal new young representative, texted me and said, "Hey, I think Ava's getting traction." I said, "Say no more. I'm there." And when you're on the floor of the convention, there's a lot of work that can be done to whip votes, to get people to vote for people, and no one really thought that going into it that Ava was going to be necessarily that much of a player. But it really came down to Ava and Biswith.
Yeah.
And the fact is that people sort of felt like they were not part of the decision making process, which it's always better to include as many people as possible. And, I think that there is an aversion really to having two white people at the top of the ticket.
Yeah.
Myself included, I have an aversion to that
too.
Because we want the Democratic Party to be as representative as possible. Because look at what the Republican Party is. It's white across the board, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have a pocket here with Senator Logan and you have Representative Candelora. But by and large, it's a very homogeneic party, or homogeneous party, I should say. So that is an important aspect of if we want to be actually representing what our constituencies look like, then we need to be putting people on the ballot line that actually look like their constituencies.
Right.
And I also know that for Ava, it's not about using the progressive platform as a way to get elected at a time when it's politically popular. It's about being there when it's also not politically popular. And it's about pushing people on issues because it's very uncomfortable when people really want that status quo and to keep on doing the same thing over and over and over again to push people outside of their comfort box level. Mm-hmm. And I know that Ava is right there with me on all the issues that are important to me. So for me, it was not a matter of just like hoping and trusting that once she got elected that she would be there and she'd be good. I know she's there and I know she's good because we've had these personal conversations at a time when she wasn't even running for office.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's why I was able to make that switch very easily once it came time to actually vote.
Nice.
Well, I think it's been a good thing. I really do. It's kind of recharged this whole election process because, like you say, I think people need to realize Connecticut is now a more diverse state than it ever has been. And like you say, the people running the state have to reflect the people who live in the state. And I think, and I really believe that Ava will win the primary. I just think she has the support of the people.
Well, here's the interesting thing, too, that's going to happen. So Ava's raised about $35,000, and she needs $76,000 to qualify for the funding. Now, because Susan had already declared as governor, even though she raised a ton of money for that race, none of that money can translate into the money that she needs to raise for LG, which means that now she's essentially $35,000 behind Ava, which means that even though, like, psychologically it feels as though Susan has this major advantage, it actually is now at the point where Ava has actually a pretty good advantage. And even though, it went 60-40 in favor of Susan at the convention, Ava's going to have the cities. Ava's going to have the progressive vote. And she's really going to have a large part of that very dedicated base. And she also has the money advantage. So, when you say that she's actually an advantage, it's really interesting how it came out that she was an underdog in any race that she was looked at. And now all of a sudden coming out of the convention, even not having won the majority and not being on the top of the ticket, or the line A come November or August, I should say, this is hers to lose now, which is really exciting.
I think it's great. I think it's what the party needed.
I think so too.
It gets people at least excited about a ticket that could be a little bit different. Now, Joe Ganim, Do you think he's going to go forward with this primary?
Who, Ganim?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. You know, he's raised a lot of money, and you can't compare apples to apples here because the money that he's raised versus the money that someone using CEP has raised is different. But that said, you know, Lamont is self-financing. He's got millions and millions of dollars of his own money to put into this. Ganim, on the other hand, has to go after, you know, private individuals. He didn't hit that 15%, so he has to hit, I don't know, it's 15,000-17,000 signatures. Right. I'm not sure of the exact number. But he has to get a lot of signatures in a pretty short period of time, and it has not been done before to date. That's not to say that it can't be done. And if he really wants to get on the ballot, then he can use all that money to just go out there and get signatures. And, you know, when I got elected, I had to get signatures as well, not nearly as many. But it is an opportunity to go out there and be in front of people. And that money that he's using to get signatures is not money that's wasted. That's money that's really being used in an effective way to campaign. It's just doing double duty. It's that right. Name recognition. It's getting people to buy into the campaign. But then it's also literally just to get onto the ballot. From everything that I've heard, he's going to fight for it. And I'm a big fan of primaries. You know, I'm personally not going to be a Ganim supporter. I'm going to be a pretty lukewarm Ned supporter. You know, my feeling on Ned is that he's very, very good on the social issues. I have yet to see if he's going to stand up and say that we need better systems of taxation, more equitable systems of taxation. Because if we believe in the American dream, then we shouldn't be having it so that if you are making less money, you're paying double the rate of taxes that you know, our wealthier colleagues are.
Right.
So that's going to be a major fight for me down the long run. But at the same time, I know the people that Ned is putting around him. And I know Ganim will be good on the issues, too, if he were to get elected. I just think, you know, there's a perception problem. And right. I think perception is reality. And, you know, there are other good progressive leaders out there that it doesn't need to be Joe Ganim. That's been my position from the beginning, is that yes, you might be good on issues, but there are other people who will be good on issues too, and it does not need to be you. You know, you got elected to do your job in Bridgeport the way that Luke Bronin got elected to do his job in Hartford. And I think ultimately at the end of the day, you know, you're surrounded by people and you've gotten elected, and they're telling you that, you know, that you're a worthy challenger. But just because you're a worthy challenger in a very specific part of the state doesn't mean necessarily that that's going to translate around the state. And I think that by and large, it's not just the community of politicos that feel that he's not the best fit to be the governor right now. I think that's going to really translate across the state to people who are less involved politically. And but we'll see how it all pans out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be an interesting summer. We'll have to see how it all plays out in August. Now, as far as
let's talk about cannabis now.
Yes. Now, Ned Lamont, what is the stance for Ned Lamont on cannabis? And I know Ava, I believe, is pro cannabis.
Yes.
I would say just about everybody that is running for office on the statewide ticket is pro cannabis. Fortunately. But, you know, even Malloy, the fact that he wasn't a champion, I really think that he would have ended up voting or allowing the bill to pass if we had gotten it through the legislature.
Mm-hmm. So, I agree.
Well, that's what we need to talk about.
You know, Governor, LG, and all these different positions about where they are on legalization. When it comes down to it, if it doesn't get out of the legislature, it's never going to hit the governor's desk.
Well, let's talk about how we make that happen.
Me, it always comes back to the fact that, you know, we had that bare majority in the House and we were split in the Senate. And that split really is what killed us, too. But we weren't even close in terms of legalizing. And that's, you know, that's going to be the big thing, is that, you know, all of our gubernatorial candidates and again, statewide constitutional candidates know that we are, you know, it's got a 70% plus approval rating, and there's really almost nothing that is as popular as the idea of legalization and regulation.
Right.
It's just these little nodes in these towns. And, you know, what's interesting is that someone had alerted me to this study, and what it shows is that as soon as you become an elected official, you begin to believe that your constituency is significantly more conservative than they actually are. So even if we have representatives or senators that are in districts that are by and large for legalization, the people that they're hearing from are almost exclusively against it, and they think that they'll lose their seat over it. So I'm always pushing people. It's like, yes, top of ticket is important. Yes, you know, we want somebody who's not going to veto this bill. At the same time, if we don't have like a whole bunch more numbers in the Democratic Party that get elected, and if we don't have people pushing on the ground floor, those representatives and senators that aren't already there, then it doesn't matter what the governor or lieutenant governor thinks, because they can champion something, but at the end of the day, they're just still just one voice in the cacophony of overall voices.
So how do we get pro-cannabis Democrats? Because obviously, if we couldn't get it through, there were some Democratic holdouts who are up for election this year. How do we get pro-cannabis Democrats and maybe even a few pro-cannabis Republicans? Because I understand we're losing Melissa Gibran.
Yeah, what? There's actually
she's moving up to state Senate.
Between 5 to 8 Republicans that are voting for it.
How do we get these pro-cannabis Democrats in these seats? Or are these holdouts now all of a sudden, once they get elected, going to change their vote to yes?
Primaries. Primaries are good.
Right.
Even if it's not a serious candidate, someone who is like forcing people to talk about this issue over and over again. It's just that if you don't have a primary, you're not forced to talk about some of these issues.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if you're a somewhat conservative or moderate Democrat and you don't have a primary and you're only up against a Republican who's most likely going to be against legalization, then if you're not for it, you're still a better pick for a Democrat to vote for a Democrat, even if you're against legalization. Mm-hmm. So it really comes down to, do we have people that are willing to throw their hat in the race, in the ring, and if they're not necessarily going to win, just to push people on these issues. And that's what primaries are good for. And, you know, party insiders don't want to do that additional work. And there's this feeling that if you have primaries, that it's harder for the party to quote unquote come together, which is also ironic, because then there's also party insiders that will like want their person over somebody else. And then all of a sudden it's okay for them to do so. So for me, it always comes down to, we need to give voters a choice. And when I say we, that's the sort of royal we as people, because, you know, the Democratic establishment in every town is going to have their pick. And when they have their pick, everything that they're going to do and all their verbiage is going to be try to get the person who's not the pick out of the race, not make it hard for them to win, not campaign well. It's what can we do to put our thumb on the scale to get that person out of the race so we don't even have to do the work. Mm-hmm. And I think that's bad for democracy. You know, because I was in my race so much earlier, that meant 3 more months of door knocking for my primary, which gave me even more chance to connect with voters, to get them to know where I am on issues and who I am as a person and what my goals would be if I were to get elected. And, you know, even a number of people that are running right now are sort of waiting to go out there and actually be active and start getting ready for November. And I think that primaries are really, really healthy because they facilitate that discussion. And so that's what it comes down to for me. But it's, you know, it's difficult to organize those things because usually you're relying on those internal town establishments to help you run your race. And if you don't have that, you can sort of be in the wilderness a bit. And even so, you know, there is help out there, whether it's Working Families Party or whether it's the unions. And I've put myself out there to be a point of contact to get people to know who to talk to and where to go. You know, at this point, it's a little bit late because we do have conventions on the town level across the state over this next week or so.
Right.
So the chance of being able to get in and actually run a primary are now closing. But this is a long term thing because, you know, it may be that even over the next cycle, we're still not able to get it done. And all this organizing, you know, we can be organizing now for 2020.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're trying to do.
The most important thing is that all of this is cumulative.
Right.
And then we're running out of time, but we probably need to have you back to have a couple more conversations. And I specifically want to talk about, you know, okay, we get legalization. Like, what are these bills going to look like?
Right.
You know, who's going to have access to ownership and inclusion and what is going into communities. So, you know, I think those, although it's like we're like struggling to just get adult use pushed through, but the same time, it's like we definitely need to be pushing for adult use, but also pushing for an industry that is reflective of the people in this state. So.
Well, there are reparative aspects. I mean, A, we obviously have to go for expungement of records.
Absolutely.
But then B, we have to acknowledge within the legislation the fact that, you know, you could be white, wealthy, and pushing pharmaceuticals, mm-hmm. but if you're dealing, you know, weed on the street, then you could end up behind bars for 5 to 10
exactly.
years.
Right.
And if we don't have laws that sort of reflects the fact that okay, so let's be generous and say the purpose of these laws weren't for racial intents, which you know, I've read enough to not believe that to be the case.
Yeah, we shouldn't even be that generous.
There's that intent behind it, right. And also explaining to some people who don't feel that way that even if they don't feel that way, they have to look at what's actually happened as a
right.
result of these laws.
Right,
that we need to have laws that allow people on the ground floor to be able to be successful in this
right.
industry as well.
Right.
You know, at end of the day, what's going to end up happening, as with any business, is there's going to be a monopolization effect.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you'll have right. people come out of the gate, and even if you give them a head start, you know, some of these larger organizations, whether it's like cigarette companies or whoever it is, are going to come in and try to buy up.
Mm-hmm.
But at least give people the chance of an equal playing field to start and then see where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I think a good time to start would be now with the medical program.
Right.
Like adding
yep.
a little diversity element to that application, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the next time that they do, even if it's between sessions, it would be nice if there was a
yeah.
way that the next time they do a RFA for grow facilities is what I would think would be next. That's
mm-hmm.
included now.
Right. We could do that.
Yep.
Josh, we got to go. I got the high sign from Harry. We got to get off the air. Listen, how do people get in touch with you? I know, do you have a primary going on in your district, or are you the Democratic candidate?
I do not have a primary. You know, I try not to be hypocritical. And so what I say is that, you know, if anybody wants to challenge me, I welcome the challenge.
Okay.
But this time around, people, I think, have felt in the Democratic Party that I'm standing up for their ideals and beliefs, and they know I'm working.
You do a great job.
So I just have a general election.
Great. So how do people get in touch with you so they can,
the
you know, support your campaign?
The best way to get in touch with me would be to jump onto my Facebook page. It's just, you know, Josh for State or State Representative Josh Elliott.
Okay.
I also want to make a plug that I am still fundraising. So if anybody wants to chip in, that would be super helpful. It's joshforstaterep.com. And I respond to everybody all the time. I'm not always super timely, especially now that we're at a session. You know, there might be a week or so lag time, but I do get back to everybody. Another way is just josh.elliott@cga.ct.gov. CGA standing for Connecticut General Assembly. And then it's 2 L's and 2 T's in my last name. So that's a good way to get in touch too.
Okay.
But I'm out there. I'm accessible.
Yeah.
Oh, Josh, we'll have you on again and I'll be in touch for the next time. Thank you so much.
Sounds good. You
Thank
got
you.
It.
Have
Thank
a good
you.
One, Josh.
Take care.
All right. We got to wrap it up here real quick. I did want to mention a couple of events. We got June 6th is the medical marijuana support group at Bohemian High. That's from 7 to 9, and that's in Milford.
Yeah.
June 7th is the Women Grow meeting that we spoke about, which is with Jason Ortiz and Avery Pressa from mm-hmm. Normal. That is at Sol de Cuba from 5:30 to 8. That's a nice little networking event. We got June 20th. There's another medical marijuana patient support group at Rubber Match on Whaley Avenue. That's from 7
that's
to
New
9.
Haven.
Mm-hmm. That's New Haven.
Mm-hmm.
And then June 21st is the Connecticut Normal Monthly Meeting at Box 63 in New Haven.
Yeah.
So next week, we'll see you all next week. We ran a little over this week, but there was a lot to talk about. It was a great show, and
yeah,
we'll see you all
Marvin
next week's
Washington
Memorial Day.
And Josh Elliott.
Yes, we'll have them both on again. We're not going to be on next week. It's
yeah,
a week
no.
off. We'll run a replay.
Day. I won't even be
It's
here.
Memorial Day. We'll run a replay for you guys. All right.
That's right.
Dreams that I never lived, but if I think about it, then I mean I really did. Just not yet. I used to wish that I was here now. Smooth sailing on my own boat. I'm about to jump up on another plane. Right before I take another tote. It's all love. If you here, you done been through it. It's your business if you went to it. If it ain't mine, I ain't into it. So I don't care what you meddling. You can say what you peddling, cause they can easily influence. I'm about to take another long drive, cause it helped me get a clear mind. So while you staring at your watch, I'll be looking at the sun. Yeah, I'm moving on real. I used to wish that I was here now. Smooth sailing on my own boat. About to jump up on another plane. Right before I take another tote. I used to wish that I was here now. Smooth sailing on my own boat. About to jump up on another plane. Right before I take another tote. I used to wish that I was here now. Smooth sailing on my own boat. About to jump up on another plane. Right before I take another tote. I used to wish that I was here now. Smooth sailing on my own boat. About to jump up on another plane. Right before I take another tote. I always knew that I'd be here now.
standing on his own two. A move I make is real humble. Hustle. That's exactly what a man do. You playing games and you only get one turn. So I'm moving on a low two. In the game, roll a whole gram up. In the backwood, no, you got row two. I used to wish that I was dead now. Jumping off another plane. Stepping foot on another planet. Resurrected, but they call me by the same name. So if you know me like your chalice, or you could put it in a blunt too. All praise to the most.